Carol Wolf.
Figure next.
Carol Wolf on.
Carol on the set.
Please.
Les.
Okay.
Am I up, Carolyn?
Yes, please.
Okay, Les. I want to speak, and you can then correct me if I'm wrong. We have a show that airs daily here in Houston. It lasts about 2 minutes, Monday through Friday. This would not happen where this person would be running for the board, but I want to assume that he could be, okay? It is Jim Hightower. He is the former Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Texas. Maybe some other Pacifica stations carry this. But this guy has the Hightower Report. It airs actually twice every day, but once is a rebroadcast. So it's about 40 minutes in a month. So in 3 months, it does not exceed the number of hours on the air. Then there is the question of prep time. But what I really want to say is that I think it was the intent of the people who drafted these bylaws to make sure that people who have airtime are marginalized, and that it is mostly people who are not involved in Pacifica programming who serve on these boards, and it is only a small number of people who are programmers who serve on the board. And if you have your liberal interpretation that somebody who has a 30-minute, once a week show on the air, and prep time is considered very minimal, there is a strong possibility that these boards are going to be made up, they're going to be dominated by programmers. So I would like to encourage you to talk to the general managers. I think Dwayne Bradley here in Houston had a very liberal interpretation of who can run as a programmer, and had a very liberal interpretation of preparation time, and therefore our board is largely made up of people from the community who are not programmers, and I hope we keep it that way.
Yeah.
I would like your response.
Yeah, two things. Number one is if the person, Jim Hightower, anybody, does not have 30 hours in 3 months, they are not a member of the unpaid staff. Therefore, they run as a listener, and the fair campaign provisions apply to them. In other words, during that period of the campaign, they cannot be on the air, period. If they're on the air, they can be removed as candidates. Straight out. That's also my understanding is that did happen in L.A., that Sherna was not on the air during the period that she was running. If I'm wrong on that, that would have been incorrect for the local election supervisor to allow that. My understanding is during that period, she was off the air. I've talked to her about this, and that was her understanding as well. So if the person, remember the bylaws were written on a couple different levels. I mean, on the one level, it wanted to make sure that staff people ran as staff people, listeners as listeners. On the other level, it wanted to make sure at the same time that you didn't have huge collectives coming in and basically taking over the staff. So they have sort of a program on disability. You have 100 people, and they all say we're part of the unpaid staff and therefore can vote. That would be also be unfair, so it was both ways. I think it wasn't thought through enough, and I think what has to be thought through is at some point anybody who's on the air regularly is automatically a member of the unpaid staff. That can be written in, but the bylaws would have to be changed. So right now, Jim Hightower, it sounds like, would be running as a listener member, and the minute that the campaign begins, he is no longer on the air. And he'd have to agree to that. If he was on the air, he would be removed as a candidate.
Okay. Well, you've got a tough one there. Good luck to you.
That's not a tough one. That's straight out. I mean, it really isn't tough. It's very easy because he won't be on the ballot.
In other
words, this is not a matter of waiting for somebody to voluntarily do something. I mean, if that is recognized that the guy goes on the air violating the fair campaign provision, he simply will not be on the ballot.
Okay, last night, we had a show on the air that's on for 1 hour once a week. That means it's 4 hours in a month or 12 hours in 3 months.
Times nine per hour for production.
9 hours per hour on the air?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Harrison?
Thank you.
I'm having problems with the approach to collectives. I think the collectives are a great thing, and I want to encourage them and all of that. And it seems to me that the bylaws say that if you put in your 30 hours in a 3 month period, then you're going to vote as staff. And
yep.
It seems to me that collective decision making takes more time, and collaboration is what we're trying to encourage. So it seems to me that if a collective meets, you know, for 3 hours a week, that a lot of people ought to be voting as staff members. And if proper records are kept, I think you should let them. And this only two people per collective seems inappropriate to me. But
that's why all the unpaid staff members will be listed at the stations. They will be listed. People will check the list, and if they're not on it, they will appeal. If they have written records that show that there's, you know, like minutes or anything, that there's been these extra meetings and extra time, then they will be part of the unpaid staff. If it's all informal, like I'm pretty sure that I put in this time, I have no records of it, but I'm pretty sure I did. I think I attended that meeting, then they won't be.
Okay, that was my
question. But they do need to, I mean, they do need, I'm sort of arbitrarily setting August 1st as a deadline for these lists to be posted at all the stations. So we have from August 1st to September 1st for people to appeal. The reason I want them posted is so that people have the opportunity to appeal.
So that was one of my several questions, Les. I had four short ones. They are now three. Number one, are the deadlines, have you changed any of the deadlines, or the deadlines for the posting and announcing and so on as we know them? Second question
I didn't understand the question.
Well, is there a deadline? The August 1st deadline, that's what I wanted to check. And are there any other deadlines that you want to affirm?
Just the other timelines that are on the website.
Exactly. Okay, nothing's changed. Good. And then the second question is, is there a volunteer coordinator? We passed 2 years ago, the PNB passed a motion requiring a volunteer coordinator at each station. And
ooh,
I know we
good.
Don't
I didn't,
have one.
I didn't know that. I'm sorry. I should have known that, but I didn't.
No, I sent that to you, I think, only today, I'm afraid. I just noodling through the old PNB motion.
Oh, excellent.
And
excellent.
There is such a requirement, but it was in the passive voice, shall be, you know, appointed. Doesn't say who. So
uh-huh.
I know we don't have any such at WBAI.
Oh, excellent.
And
yeah.
I don't know how. I think there may be a slight conflict of interest between, let's say, a staff member or an unpaid staff member being that volunteer coordinator. That was a question for me. Who should be the volunteer coordinator? Should it be a listener member from outside the station? I don't know. But anyway, there should be one. And do any of the stations have one? And then my next question was,
the answer is yes, some stations do.
Okay, good. And then the next question was about waivers. The question has come up here. I've gotten a few questions about it. I know it's technically each local station has to decide, but there need to be some uniform standards. We've already come up against some questions here about how to notify members. For instance, would it be all right to justify the mailing to an entire membership list about waivers, which seems silly. If they're on the membership list, they don't need to know about waivers. It's the people who are not on the membership list. So mailing to them strikes me as a bit of overkill. But are there any uniform rulings that you know, that would apply to all stations about
nor can there be.
Mm-hmm.
Again, from the bylaws,
mm-hmm.
each local station board will determine their waiver requirements, and they will determine who should get a waiver on a case-by-case basis, looking at the fact that they are in need, that they have shown a sincere interest in the station,
mm-hmm.
That they lack financial means to contribute the $25, and they lack the ability to serve 3 hours as a volunteer.
Yeah, my question really had to do with how to get the word out. Who do you have to authorize, or who authorizes a mailing to the membership?
Local station board.
The board itself?
Yeah.
Okay. Not a committee, then. All right, because that's a huge expense, and I just think it's really ridiculous. But that's, you know, one issue. All right, Carol, I think you were the next person on the list. Carol?
Oh, I'm sorry. My question is, we've had discussion at our local station board about reinstating a program that used to be on the air that was a program to keep listeners up to date on LSD activities. And my question is how you would feel about LSD members who are running as candidates being on the air on that show during the time of the election.
I'm going to get this to the local station boards. Any candidate, anybody who, I'm going to be pretty draconian about this. Anybody who plans on running, if anybody appears on these programs after the nomination period is open, I got to get this out next week, they're going to be disqualified from running.
Okay.
I don't want that. I mean, that's, you know, because if they're running, they are not the candidate to be talking to the listeners about an update of the local station board. It really would be very, very unfair. It's particularly true. Hello?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is this my phone going or is something else happening? Just a minute. I'm going to switch
phones.
Some
static just got off. Uh-huh.
I'm going to switch phones. Just a minute.
All right.
Melinda, I would encourage you to ask him your question that you put on the agenda tonight.
Is there anyone else on the stack after Carol?
I thought that was going to go on the next agenda.
Serene for the stack.
Serene.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. Now, hello?
Yes, go ahead, Les.
Okay. One of the reasons why I feel strongly about this is because almost 100% of the people who listen to those shows vote. I mean, if we're talking of a natural selection, the average listener, and the average listener doesn't vote, by the way. The average listener doesn't listen to those programs. The ones who listen to what's happening on the LSB are the very activists, almost 100% of whom vote. And so it's a disproportionate, it's really talking to voters directly. And it seems to me that that really disqualifies a person who's running from the program.
Mm-hmm. I am on the stack. I just want a clarification on this particular point.
Excuse me. Is Carol, does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you very much.
Okay, fine. Serene, I think you were next.
I think you said anyone who's on there after the nomination period closes. Do you mean after the nomination period opens?
Opens.
Okay.
Okay, that clarifies that very
thank
well.
You. By the way, I want to thank Serene because she. you're going to see updates on all the web pages. You know, they keep coming in as Serene does corrections on what I've done, and I thank you for that. You're the one person who's actually gone through this stuff systematically, and you know, it's still not great. But as I put this stuff out, I do appreciate people reading it and coming back and saying, this really doesn't make sense.
I haven't even been able to find it at BAI. Where is it on BAI?
Oh, you just go to the bottom of the webpage, and you go click.
Of the old or the two? We happen to have
of the main page.
WBAI.org.
Okay, I'll look for it. Thank you. All right, any other questions for Les? Les,
I asked Melinda to ask her question, but if she doesn't want to, I will.
All right, go ahead, Ted. One last question.
Service on this committee, if our terms are up and we are running for, and we are thinking about running for re-election to the LSB, what is your feeling about us serving on this committee? And also, let me take a step further, and that is, if we, let me put it this way. I thought during the first election where I was running for the LSB that my assistance was invaluable to the chair of the committee, and I think she would agree that it was. And while I wasn't necessarily a voting member of the committee, I helped set up events, I helped secure facilities for for events and so on. So there's a difference between being a member of a committee with voting privileges and being there to assist the process, which might not have gone forward had some of us not stepped in and done that kind of work. So would you address both service and...
Both of those.
Okay.
They're easy. Both of those are easy,
okay.
Not controversial. Really aren't. On the national committee thing, that's not my decision. That's a governance board of a national board.
And have they addressed it as far as you know?
No. As far as I know, they haven't addressed it, and I'm not going to address it.
And then on the local level?
I'm not an election supervisor. I don't determine anything about the election committees of local station boards or the National Election Committee of the Pacific National Board. So that answer, I mean, that's my answer to that question. The second question, we all know that there's informality that goes on. I mean, that goes on everywhere. I mean, one can't outlaw that. So if for example, the chair of the committee has you over for dinner and we can't talk during this period, or in some cases they're married to each other. that's an informal thing that I know goes on. We all know that goes on. And the idea of trying to pretend that we're going to limit this informal stuff is silly. What I can do is make rules for the formal body so that when you have a committee meeting, if you're running, you should not be at that committee meeting.
You shouldn't be present?
No.
I thought these meetings are open.
I am turning that over again to the local election supervisor, but I would say that it's very difficult when you have these committees to have a candidate sit there and then they'll raise their hand. I mean, I did this when I was the election supervisor at KPFA, and then the candidate's running and say, you know, I'm a candidate and I'm running, but I just want to say, no, you're not going to say. And, you know, I suppose it's possible to have a section, which is a non-speaking section to observe. But I really, you know, the more we collapse the informality and the formality, I think the worse it gets. It doesn't help the process because people are aware there are going to be some candidates that take part in this process. If, in fact, there is a non-speaking section just to observe, that should be clearly delineated, and it should be made sure that all candidates understand that they can come to that. All the candidates have to be notified of that.
Okay, let me just say one other thing, and that is that earlier it was stated that the minutes of the election committee were frequently almost immediately posted, but they were posted as minutes of a LSB, and these are not committees of the LSB, as I understand it. So I think that if you're not going to allow candidates to be present at these meetings and they want to know what was decided, something needs to be done to make sure that in a very transparent way, those minutes can be seen and seen quickly.
That's true. You are right. That's true. And not only is true, too, there's a lot of work that the local election supervisor has. That's also true. But it is true that if one candidate or two candidates are regularly attending those meetings, it's even more important that the minutes go out because otherwise the people who don't attend are really at a disadvantage.
Terry, I'm
interesting. Saying. Yes. Terry, go ahead, Terry.
Yeah. Elections committees aren't governance bodies. There's no requirement for transparency. What's important is that any decisions that are made that affect candidates get communicated to all candidates.
Right.
That's wrong. That happens, and they can do what they want.
This is Ted. I'd like to respond to that before Les does. And Terry, that's fundamentally wrong because it violates a basic principle of fairness that exists within Robert's Rules of Order, which we abide by. And so even though there may not be any specific language that says anything about the posting of minutes and so on, the fundamental principle of fairness says that you have minutes of these meetings and they are accessible to all participants in the organization and they are accessible quickly.
Mm-hmm. Les, do you want to navigate those orders?
It The bylaws actually on this can be read in a couple of different ways, and I do have to weigh this, because given that the way it's set out is that the election supervisors are removed from the governance process, it's not at all clear that those meetings are governed by Robert's rules. I don't read it that way. What is certain, what really is important, is that all candidates be aware of decisions that are made. Those decisions might have to do with the number of times that they're on the air, when carts are to be played, any events that are to take place. I mean, all of that stuff has to be gotten to candidates. We've actually made a rule, by the way, this time, that all candidates will have email. And if they don't, the local election supervisor will set them up with email. We want to, and as well as an access to it. We want to make sure that this stuff is readily available. That part is true. I know with the minutes thing, it has been erratic.
I'd like to say something.
I really need to think about this and have people give me more feedback on it. I really will seriously consider how to do this.
All right.
Les?
Yeah.
I think it's very important.
I'm sorry. Where am I on the stack exactly?
Oh, I didn't know you were on the stack. I thought you had spoken. Do you want to get on the stack?
I would like my place on the stack to be observed, yes.
I didn't hear you say you wanted to be on the stack. Sorry, I thought you had spoken. All right, right after Ted, then. I don't hear anyone else. Go ahead, Ted.
Article 16 of the bylaws say that the rules contained in Robert's Rules of Order, newly revised as amended from time to time, shall govern the foundation in all cases where they are applicable and in which they are not inconsistent with these bylaws or any special rules of order which the foundation may adopt. We have not adopted
Wait. The problem here is that the election supervisors are not members of the foundation. And it states that clearly. You don't have to be members of the foundation. We're not governed by the rules of the members of the foundation. We're not governed by rules that the Pacifica National Board sets up. I think that it went too far, but that's why I'm giving you my statement that probably we're not governed by the Roberts Rules of Orders, because those apply to the members of the foundation. And we're acting as supervisors, not as members of the foundation.
You are not members of the foundation, but these are elections of the foundation, and in principle, there are no other rules that exist to govern these elections. These elections are conducted by the foundation, and I would suggest to you that you open up yourself to a huge can of worms if you do not follow Robert's Rules of Order as it applies to elections, except where our bylaws say something that supersedes the recommendations in terms of elections of Robert's Rules. But the sharing of minutes and transparency, even though this person may be an outsider who's not a member of the foundation, it is the foundation's elections. I can't say this any more strongly that I don't see any downside in following Roberts, and I see only an upside to it. I hope you will reevaluate your statement on this.
Yeah, I'll consider everything that's been said on this. Up to this point, the committee meetings of the supervisors have not followed Roberts' rules.
I'll bet you they have. I'll bet you don't know.
I was a local election supervisor.
Point of order.
This is actually my fourth election.
Point of order, yes.
Well, I would say that this issue has been examined completely, and I think we should move the agenda and move the stack of the, Les has heard everyone's, or at least has heard a point of view, and it seems to me we're kind of like doing overkill on this issue right now.
All right, thank you, Don. Point well taken. Serene, you are next.
That's my question was, and I was driving, so I might have missed something, and so please correct me. In speaking about the people who were eligible to participate
as members of the election committee. I know the decision will be made locally, but I wasn't too clear on what you said about members, people who are currently members of the LSB who may be running. I thought I heard you say that if someone is running, they cannot be a member
That's
of the
correct.
Committee.
If they are running, they are not members of the election committee.
Right. But I'm wondering if in the case of the LSB, you might also want to say someone who is eligible to run, since someone may not decide to run until September 25th, for example. And in terms of the general public, people who are not currently members of the board but may decide to run, if in fact they make that determination, if they get on the committee in July and they make that determination in September, are they eligible to run, or would their previous service have disqualified them? I guess my point is that if you can't be both a candidate and a member of the committee, whether
right.
you're currently a member of the LSB or not yet a member of the LSB, service on the committee should preclude your being able to run. I mean, the same rule should apply.
Yeah, I would. That sounds fair. That the person, I need to formalize that, but it sounds fair to me, and I've thought of that earlier, that the determination to join the committee means that you've made a determination not to run. And I will talk to the local election supervisors about that. I think we have to be very clear about this from the get-go. But that sounds fair to me. I mean, a person may be ambiguous. If they're ambiguous, it doesn't seem quite fair that they go to the committee meetings and sort of use the committee meetings to help make their determination. It seems that they should just withdraw. If there's not enough people to be on the committee other than those who are running, there's something wrong anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay, another question. With regard to the volunteer list and who the volunteer coordinator can... First of all, I'm not quite sure, although I was on the committee last year, how, and I believe I probably would have objected to this, although I don't remember the details. If the committee says you must have a volunteer coordinator, the committee, of course, has found a way to finance such a position. Otherwise, it becomes, you know, an unfunded mandate, and that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So if, in fact, such a position has been declared as a must-be at every station, I'd like to know where the money is coming from. But the concern about who the volunteer coordinator should be, whether it should be a staff person or a listener person, it seems to me fairly obvious that staff people can vote for staff people. So the possible conflicts of interest in putting someone who could either that year or the following year be, in fact, a candidate as the person who then controls the volunteers, interacts constantly with the volunteers as a coordinator, that there's a great conflict of interest. And it seems obvious to me that that person would have to be a member of the staff rather than someone who would, in fact, be conditioning, you know,
yeah.
their
the,
own constituency.
The volunteer
so.
Coordinators that I know of are all staff.
Right.
Paid staff?
And,
yes, I believe they are, actually.
And there was one more. Oh, on the issue of waivers, there was a gross misstatement, unintentional, I'm sure, about mailing to members. The mailing, I can only speak for what we're doing here in New York, and I don't know what other people are doing, but I hope they are doing something, because they are people who love the stations and live the mission and can't afford the money or can't afford to get down to the station to do 3 hours, you know, 3 hours time for all sorts of reasons. But the statement was that a mailing...
Hello?
Serene, you're cutting out. We didn't hear what you just said. Hello?
Hello?
I think we lost her on the call. She must have been on the cell phone. Hello? Okay, I guess we lost Serene. Are there any other questions for anyone?
If she comes back,
mm-hmm.
Look, all I was saying, I want to make this clear, The local election committee is not going to send out mailings on waivers. The local election committee does not have the funds to do that. The station can do it. The Pacific National Board can do it. The local station board. But that has nothing to do with the local election supervisor. There's no budget for it, for one thing. But in addition, that's not our, it's not in our list of responsibilities. If you look at the list of responsibilities, that's not in it. It is a responsibility for the local station board in terms of waivers. And in terms of mailings, that's not our responsibility.
Clearly. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Any other questions?
Terry?
Terry, go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, since Doreen's having trouble getting back on the call, I'll just mention that I expect she was going to object to the impression being left that anyone would mail to all the membership in order to identify people who qualify for waivers. The local membership lists include individuals who are not current members but have expressed interest and not pay the minimum amount. And last year at KPFK, the local station board worked with our general manager to use the criteria that we had regarding local non-members to identify a group of those that we did want to communicate with by mail and explain the local station board decision on waiver provisions. So many local station boards do have information that they can use,
yes,
in order to do a limited mailing to see if people want to apply for waivers.
Right.
Yes, clarify my statement. We did consider that people who had donated less than $25 would be, in fact, contacted. But then there was a question of contacting all of the members, the entire membership of the station, and that was another issue, and that's the issue that I raised.
Hi, I'm back, and if I could continue. Yeah, the signal dropped. I'm on my cell. There was never in this year's committee, Carolyn was a member of last year's committee, I don't know what they entertained, but there was no discussion in this year's committee of sending a mailing to people who clearly had paid more than $25, asking them whether they wanted a waiver. That obviously makes no sense. The mailing is to be directed to people who, based on their contributions of less than $25, so it's less than would qualify them for membership by virtue of a donation, but whose interest in the station is clear by the fact that they were able to make a contribution, mm-hmm, giving them the opportunity to either bring their contribution up to the $25, or if they were, or to volunteer time, or in fact to apply for a waiver, and then those applications are reviewed on an individual basis. So that's a radically different thing from that which was stated earlier, and I did want to correct that.
I stand corrected. I'm happy to hear that, because I'd heard that, and I'm glad to hear that I misheard. All right. Any other questions for Les?
I just have one last quick comment, and this,
yes,
is Ted. And what I wanted,
yes,
to say to Les is I've been teaching a class on Robert's Rules of Order for the last 20 years, and I've discovered that most people don't know the difference between a committee meeting and how they are run and a board meeting and how that is run. And so, therefore, that's where I made the statement that I don't think you have I think you probably have been following Robert's Rules for Committees in the meetings you've run. I would have to look at your minutes to ascertain as to whether I'm right or not, but I'll bet you have, and so that's my comment.
All right. Les, any final statements?
I don't want to get it. I mean, I also used to be a parliamentarian, and I can tell you our meetings were very informal, both the teleconferencing and the minutes here. And it's something that I will look at, but it raises another question. I guess it's a question that I have. Does anybody know were the supervisor meetings teleconferenced at all?
No.
Last year?
No. No. They were not.
Because there were never any minutes published of any of them.
No, they were not.
I mean, that's something at some point that I want to discuss. I do have to say I'm still interviewing a couple people, talking to them tonight from Houston, and it's actually 9 o'clock there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to go ahead and do that.
Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it very much, and I'm sure you'll
remember ballot@pacifica.org. I really read these emails as well as being called at the national office, and I try to get back to you, you know, as quick as possible. I do read the emails.
Ballot@pacifica.org. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
And Les,
yes.
I'd like to talk with you in a couple of days, okay?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
absolutely.
Les?
Yes.
Just Les? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, just one quick thing before you leave. Are you there?
I'm there.
Oh,
I'm
someone,
here.
Someone beeped. I actually do want to agree with Ted about the need for, I don't care what rules are observed at the meetings, but for the meetings to be open, I think there's a fairly high level of mistrust, shall we say. And the life of the local election supervisor will undoubtedly be made slightly less miserable if those are open meetings. And I too have some concerns about the determination that if you're part of a collective, you've got to choose, you know, two people to serve as your emissaries. But more on that to come.
It's also a violation of CPB rules to have closed meetings unless they are on fiduciary matters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much, Les. I appreciate the time.
Thanks. Good night.
Les Heyer.
Bye.
Good night. Okay, now I think the next item on our agenda is the work groups report, and there were four of those. The first one will be very short. It was on gift donations. Myself, Dawn, Mary Berg, LaVon Williams, and Harrison, and I have nothing new to report. I had one question I forgot to ask Les, but about that he was to have gotten some data for us, and I assume that he hasn't because we would have heard. So if anyone else on that work group has anything to report, I'd be happy to hear it. I'm afraid I have nothing new from WBAI.
What was the request for data?
The request for data was how many people at each station were affected, how many gift donations there were at each station. I think only Don knew from his station, from Kay, how many there were. And the rest of us had no information as to the number of gift donations there were at each station. Unless someone has found that out, I assume that we still don't know. So, well, that's 9 minutes saved right there, onward and upward. Okay, the next report is the Public Elections Committee e-list. Terry?
Yeah, I don't notice anybody using the Google list, but an issue came up today where I got a message from the Yahoo list, and not having had a decision from the committee regarding making that list, new list traffic on the Yahoo list public, I could not then reply to the Google list without risking violating the confidentiality of the sender. Maybe it would be helpful if we could get a committee decision that we're going to. Well, no, I don't know how to approach it because people may want to continue to use the Yahoo list for private communications, but I can't think of any communications that should legitimately be private that relate to committee's work. So.
Well, I would like to move that the new list have maybe yourself and Mary Berg as moderators. I don't think we need any more than that, and that we begin to use the list as a group. If anyone has any objections to that.
Hello?
Yes, Serene.
So you're actually moving to remove me as a moderator?
Well, yeah, I didn't see any reason to have anyone other than the secretary and for technical support, Terry, on there. Mm-hmm.
And you know enough about my technical skills versus Terry's technical skills and our mutual availability and so forth to make this recommendation?
Well, that may be your interpretation.
I'm asking you a question. I'm just trying to understand your motive with your motion.
The motion was to streamline it and make it as effective as possible, and I thought Terry and Mary would be quite enough. I don't see the need for any more moderators on there. Are there any comments on that or objections, or do we want to take that to a vote? Or
This is Harrison.
Yes, Harrison.
When you're a moderator, how does it work? If you're gonna, the moderators can remove messages. What authority do they have?
Well, they, Terry, you listed. I don't know how Google works. Why don't you explain how? I know how the Yahoo groups works, but I don't
know
how
they
Google
can
works.
Work all kinds of ways at the discretion of the moderator. The way they've been set up is that members would be unmoderated. And non-members could not post. If an incident happened that required switching members to moderation, then the members would be notified, and it ought to be done with the approval of the chair.
I don't know that
anybody other than the committee secretary really needs to be the list. Need to have moderator rights.
Mm-hmm. Is it set up like Yahoo, that there is one owner and then the moderators are given privileges by the owner?
Pretty close.
Pretty close. Mm-hmm.
And just to answer Harrison's question maybe a bit more fully, is that the owner is the person who first creates the list, but in selecting moderators, they can give every power, if you will, to everyone else who is made a moderator, including the ability to ban, unban, add, remove. A moderator is not, in most cases, the czar. A moderator is someone who facilitates the process for other people. So I've never heard of a need for fewer moderators. So I think that's an interesting concept. But it's just a matter of, helping with problems. If problems occur, I can't get my messages, I've been bounced off, add me under this address, change this address, I don't know how to go into Yahoo to do it, I don't know how to go into Google to do it. It's a matter of sharing the work, so it's an interesting concept that we need fewer people to work.
Well, what would happen if there were disagreements amongst the moderators or the membership? Would you even know?
If a group had multiple moderators who were really antagonistic to each other, then whichever one acted first would win, because moderators have the ability to remove the privileges of other moderators, typically.
Right, but, control...
And then the committee would get down on them
mm-hmm.
for doing it.
Right. Well, I would like to move that we open this list to the public and make the secretary and Terry the moderators for the list and announce it to the public. Perhaps we could let the secretary do that.
Are there any
objections to that? Or?
This is Harrison. I guess my alternative would be that anybody who wants to be a moderator be allowed to be so. What would be wrong with that? I mean, it would be apparent to the other moderators what anybody did, right?
In Yahoo groups, moderators' activities are transparent to other moderators. So if that is your motion, I would move making every member of this committee a moderator. We could then track the actions of every other moderator in whatever went on, if that's your intention.
We actually have a couple of LSB listservs, committee listservs in New York where all members are moderators and are able to do everything, including files. There are some committee, there are some listservs where the owners, the people who first founded the list, demand the right to exclusively post files and that sort of control mechanism. For the most part, a moderator is a clerk for the rest of the group. Not the boss of the rest of the group.
Well, should we vote on Harrison's suggestion? The question is then, what powers will the moderators have? You see, the person who set up the group can delegate powers. If you're suggesting that the moderators be given all of the powers, I would suggest all of the powers except the right to delete the group, and that should remain in the hands, perhaps, of the secretary or the original owner. I don't know whether it was Mary or Terry in this case. That is one possibility. Is that your intention, Harrison?
Yeah, that sounds fine to me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Can we take a vote on that?
Won't you ask if there's an objection?
Are there any objections to that? All right. Thank you for saving us the trouble. Hearing no objections, then we will do that. Now, then the next question was announcing it as such. Mary, I gather, is still not on the list. She was having trouble with her cell phone today, so I expect that was the problem. But can we agree that Mary should announce the list as a public list?
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Why does it have to be sort of formally announced? I mean, some lists are quite busy, so you may miss a notice today and see it in 2 days. You can't share too much information, can you?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
I mean, I don't understand why we need to have an official announcer that the list exists, as opposed to simply asking people to share it with the listservs, the Pacifica-related listservs of which they are members.
Oh, we can do that, but there's nothing prohibiting that. Anyone can announce it to anyone once it's announced, or even before it's announced. I just wanted to make sure that someone took responsibility for announcing it, that the list is now open.
Terry likes
and
to
I thought
do that.
I thought the secretary would be the logical person to do that. Terry, would you like
right,
to
but she's
that?
Not on the call, and Terry hits all the lists all the time.
Yeah, I have a alias set up for distributing PMD meeting announcements to various specific lists, and I can distribute a notice of elections committee listserv to that same list.
Mm-hmm. All right,
and
that's
post it in the same places.
That's fine, and you'll let us know. Some of us are not so skilled at moderating what we can do and can't do and should avoid if that's possible, or at least how to find that out, as long as everyone's going to be a moderator. Mm-hmm. Okay, wonderful. So we now have an open public list. Very nice. Thank you. We have a lot of people will be very happy about that. All right, the next item was the director's report and on the elections committee motions before the PNB. Does anyone know what the status of any of our motions are? We do have one unfinished business down below of those motions, but any of the other motions, are there any unfinished before the PNB that anyone knows about? All right, hearing no answer. We don't have a report on that. And then the last report was a teleconference. Serene Roberts was going to report on the progress in a teleconference between the two unpaid staff organizations. Serene?
Right, we're actually still in pretty much the same position we were before, where New York is willing, ready, and able to proceed, and I think you heard some of the results of some of the meetings today. Apparently the UPSO, the unpaid staff organizing, unpaid staff organization in Berkeley, had been working with their IGM on some issues, and Les made reference to one of the decisions. I don't know how happy people are about it, but that each collective now gets to have two votes. So they are, as far as I know, still working on some of their issues, and they've not yet indicated their availability to join the call. I still think it's a good idea, and I'll continue to reach out to them and see where they are.
All right, so we'll leave that open. Thank you. The next item, the first item of unfinished business, was substitute language for the Elections Committee motion that was passed or presented to the PNB in December. And the decision there was to ask us to reword effectively sections C, D, E, and F of our original motions. A and B passed. Those were the, just to remind us, A and B were the motions that created staff lists one by the unpaid staff organizing committees and one by the general managers. And then the remaining parts of that, it was divided, were about monthly rosters and so on. So the substitute language requested by the PNB that is being suggested is as follows. Resolve that local and national election supervisors shall have access to the current and past membership rosters retained by general managers so that they may independently judge whether or not elections based on such membership rosters may be certified. And Terry is the maker of that. Would you like to give a little rationale for that?
Yeah, I think it does the best we can to tie up and summarize the primary content of all of C, D, E, and F without introducing controversial questions to extend debate. The PNB already passed the requirement that general managers should keep lists. What this motion would do is guarantee that, well, it would have be a PNB mandate that election supervisors have access to those lists, which would mean that a general manager would be violating the instruction of the PNB if a general manager refused to let an election supervisor see the list or refused to maintain it. So it's just giving a little more force and authority to the idea that general managers keep lists, and that if lists aren't being kept, it's ultimately the general manager's job to do it, and it's the election supervisor that once a year, every 2 out of 3 years, will want to be looking at them.
Actually, I believe, if I may, that the rule is that they need to have turn-in lists monthly. So given that requirement, it should be understood that this would allow the supervisors to look at the monthly updates of those lists.
Well, we don't have supervisors all year round.
No, no, but during the
election. But the supervisors can look at the past list.
Past list, right. Yeah, that's true. Any discussion about this motion?
This is Harrison.
Harrison.
It seems to me from what Les was saying that if records were kept of a collective and the collective members were, in fact, meeting or working in excess of 30 hours in 3 months, that they would have a right to appeal if they were excluded from the right to vote. And I don't know if this has any direct bearing on the motion, but it's something that I just wanted to mention.
I think your understanding is correct. I'm not sure it has a bearing on it either, but I think that's why Les said he was mandating that the list be posted in the stations on August 1st and challenges be made up until September 1st, when the list would close.
Carol Wolf, can I ask a question?
Carol, yes, Carol.
Does that mean that a list will be posted of listener and unpaid staff members, or was it just staff members, or is it all members?
No, no, this is just staff members.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, but this resolution, but this motion refers to all membership lists, right? That the local and national election supervisors have access.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, that is true. Well, are there any objections to this revised language as it stands, as a substitute for CDENF?
Carol, I move that we approve the motion.
That's fine. Hearing no objection, then the motion is approved as written. Thank you very much. All right, then the next item B was the discussion of priorities for this committee. An item suggested to date, I gave a list of those, and maybe for the benefit of our listeners, would someone else like to read that? My voice is beginning to go.
I can read it for you if you want.
Thank you so much.
The items under B?
Yes, right, the items that we suggested last time.
The first one is how to get a quorum. The second, how to get people to join and work on local election committees. The next, ideas for elections manual. The next is protocols for meet the candidates events. Next is ways for candidates to meet members. How to generate interest in elections with the priority being getting a quorum. Next is how to help candidates reach the members. Next is nationally applicable rules. And following that is penalties on programmers. That's it.
Okay. I'm not sure how we'd like to proceed. Anyone want to suggest how we can proceed? Les already gave us a couple of items that are going to be high priority, which may or may not be included under these items. We seem to have work groups that are not doing too much work here. So I think maybe we need to figure out another way. What is your pleasure on this, please?
This is Harrison. It seems like, to some extent, the work groups that were set up have finished their business, and to some extent that work was unnecessary because the election supervisor made decisions which with regard to some issues. It seems that maybe we should think about redesignating the working groups to correspond with our priorities.
I would agree with you, except I don't think we've finished our business very thoroughly. At least the gift donations hasn't been finished, and I'm delinquent on that one.
Well, I think hasn't Les ruled on that? That you're not going to be a member. You're not going to vote if you are a member. You're not a member if you get a gift subscription.
Right. I think we were going to find out how many in each station were involved and draft a letter to people, and we hadn't done that, either of those two things. So you're correct. The other three probably are in stasis right now. Well, would you like to deal with the question of how to get a quorum? I'm not sure what you all consider highest priority. These are all important issues.
I'm sorry, point of information.
I'm sorry, I can hardly hear. Is someone speaking?
Point of information.
Serene, okay, yes. What is that, please?
My phone dropped. What happened in the interim space to that motion?
I can't hear you, Serene.
What happened to the motion that we were discussing?
That was passed. Mm-hmm. That was passed without objection.
I'm sorry, I was speaking on the motion. My phone dropped the call, and you called a vote?
Well, nobody heard you say you were speaking to the motion. I'm sorry that we missed that you were off the call.
I'd like to reconsider.
I'm sorry?
I moved to reconsider.
You moved to reconsider? All right. What would you like to do with that? You want to speak to that? We had already voted on it. We need to take a vote. I'm not sure the protocol on that. Do we need to take a vote on reconsidering?
I believe it's simple majority.
Simple majority? Mm-hmm.
All right. Madam Chair?
Yes.
And for the sake of expediency and to try to bring this committee together rather than divide it, could you just allow her to say what she has to say and allow for a revote and not get into this in committees as long as somebody still has something to say and the meeting has not been adjourned? I think the lack of formality and motions to reconsider are really not necessary. Come on, let's be friends. And